And it is a sermon that was given by our deacon in Owerri, Nigeria. He gave it at the Feast Tabernacles. It was very moving to me personally. And he built the sermon around Psalm 90, verse 12. And it was a full sermon. So I'm going to leave a few things out. But I do want to read his comments, which Lucretia and I wrote down through her notes and my notes to get this. Boy, it is wonderful to see you guys. Let me just stop a moment and enjoy the feast for my eyes that to be able to see the brethren here, this peaceful, generally peaceful congregation. He started verse 1, Psalm 90, and read down to verse 12. It says,
at the beginning, you'll notice it says a prayer of Moses, the man of God. That's actually in the Hebrew.
That is in the Hebrew. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. It's just amazing. God has lived forever. Hard for my mind to grasp the enormity of the universe and the enormity of time. But something has to have existed forever. Now, if things can't have started with a big bang alone, what was there before? What created a big bang? What did it come from? Even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of men. God allows us to return to the dust. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past. And like a watch in the night. The night was generally divided, not always, but generally divided into three watches. Although there were times in history where they found that they divided it into four watches. So, 3-4 hours on average. Just passes. And for most of us, you know, we wake up and go back to sleep and the night just goes like that. You carry them away like a flood. They are like a sleep. And not like a spirit that goes off somewhere. We die and we're asleep. In the morning, they're like grass, which grows up. In the morning, it flourishes and grows up. In the evening, it is cut down and withers. For we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath, we are terrified. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. Job felt the same way. Jacob said the same thing to Pharaoh about his life. Actually, Moses lived 120 years, didn't he? But the average person, as one man who was turning 70 or turned 70, said, my warranty is up. You know, it was gone. Or King Finley, if any of you know King Finley the Elder, was speaking a few years ago and out in Colorado at the feast. And he said, well, you know, I'm 78. He said, no wonder I feel so bad. I've been dead for 8 years. So, you know, maybe you'll get 70, maybe 80. And then it's gone. Their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off.
and we fly away. Shall I sing that song for you? When I die. Well, they don't fly away like a spirit. But the Bible speaks of riches flying away. That they just fly away. And that's what it talks about. It's like a bird. And our life is like a bird's here and then it's gone. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. And verse 12 is the one he was getting to. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. They said the title of this sermon is, Number Your Days. Number Your Days. And I want to read some of the statements that Coleman had to say. Coleman has lost a child. He had one girl die, and of some sort of respiratory disease. They never did know what it was. And then Coleman was sick and could hardly breathe. And it turned out, of course, he's older, he's a little stronger, that they found out that he had tuberculosis. And it's possible that's what his daughter died from. And he almost died. And he said, God is aware of our mortality. He said, we are living on borrowed time. We are mortal. God wants us to number our days. I'm reading what Lucretia and I both wrote down. So that we may gain a heart of wisdom. This is not a message about death and burial. Sounds like it, doesn't it? But he said, this is not a message about death and burial. I believe there is a life after life. What he was saying is, number our days, because if we stop and look at it, it's only so much. And the only thing that we have in this life to do is to gain a heart of wisdom so we can live forever. The purpose of this sermon is to put our minds on living forever and not look at this life as an end in itself. But look at, he didn't say, I believe in life after death. He said, I believe there is a life after life. That is, how long are you dead? Lucretia's brother said that one time. He said, well, how long are you dead? See, it's just like that. And you're awake again. You feel bad. You feel rotten. You lie down. God said to Daniel, Daniel, you're going to rest and stand in your place at the end of the days. But you'll enter into rest. This life is work and struggle and trial. But its only purpose is to gain eternal life. So he says, count your days. Count your days and live. Not count your days just to when you die, but count your days, how long you have in the flesh, and prepare for life. We tend to make plans for this life. We balance our money to know what is left. Don't we do that? Don't you look at, you know, you count, you balance your checking account. You check what's in savings. Maybe you count what's in your 401k. Think about when you might could retire. And how long our money's going to last. We tend to be very careful in counting money. But we aren't very thoughtful of counting how much life we have left. You know, we all know we're going to die, but it's not today or tomorrow. It's somewhere in the future. It's, you know, I said this once before. We've been to many funerals. But none of us have been the guest of honor at them. So death is something that's always happened to somebody else, never to us. But he says, what is left of your life? Man is matter. We have limited time. Our forefathers passed away. I don't have a single ancestor living. Lucretia has one ancestor living. Her mother will be 90, January the 20th. Our plans are to be there. She may outlive us, though. You never know. Remember Dallas and Thelma Davis? She was always sickly. She had diabetes. Everyone expected her to eventually die and he would bury her. Didn't happen. Dallas seemed perfectly healthy, and then one morning he didn't wake up. Died of a heart attack in the night. I mean, you know, did he expect that when he went to bed? No. He didn't expect it. But you know, Dallas went to bed expecting to get up in the morning, and he's going to wake up faster in his mind than the night goes through, and it will be the return of Jesus Christ. What a great way to wake up, because he was faithful. So our forefathers passed away. We will pass. Even Satan counts time. You know, he's going to come back, it says in Revelation 12, and he's going to be angry because he knows he has a short time. He looks at time. Isaiah 51 in verse 6. Isaiah 51 in verse 6. It was definitely not a morose sermon. It was a sermon saying, do something with your life, and when should you do it? Today. Today. When should you do something righteous? Today. Isaiah 51 in verse 6. Even the earth, the mantle, will be changed like a garment. Now, in the Psalms, it also says that the foundation of the earth abides forever. But the outside of it will melt with fervent heat. What kind of men should we be, knowing that the outside of the earth will melt with fervent heat? And everything in this earth will be burned up, and it's like changing a garment. God's going to change the surface of the earth eventually. And we can be here to enjoy it and see the new heavens and the new earth. New in the sense of it's changed. He says, lift up your eyes to the heavens and look on the earth beneath. For the heavens will vanish away like smoke. The earth will grow old like a garment. Boy, is it growing old. Defiled. And those who dwell in it will die in like manner. We're all getting old. We're all going to fade away. And the vapor will be gone. But notice the promise. Here's the thing. Not to be morose, but to look at what we need to be doing today. It says, but my salvation will be forever. That's not morose. That's not death and dying. That's life eternal. And my righteousness will not be abolished. He made an interesting statement. He said, few people die a natural death anymore. Now in Nigeria, they tend to die of infectious diseases. If they, you know, some people do live old and just don't wake up. You know, that's the way would be a natural death, wouldn't it? Person's very old. They lie down in bed and their body just quits. But that's not the way the majority of people die. You know, the number one way that people die is heart disease in this nation. But they say that within a few years, the way things are going, cancer will surpass it and be number one. So those are the first two. Those are not natural deaths. I'm not talking about somebody getting old and their heart just quits. I'm talking about arteriosclerosis. I'm talking about all the things that happen in the heart. The arteries shut down, get clogged. Person has chronic heart disease, heart failure. That usually comes not from a lot of exercise. It's where the heart, through a lack of exercise, starts swelling. Some people say, I don't want to exercise too much because then I'll have an enlarged heart. No, an enlarged heart is not talking about a muscular heart. It's talking about a flabby heart. And it just can't take the pressure and it starts expanding. That's an enlarged heart. Muscular hearts don't have that happen to them. They may get clogged arteries, but they don't get that heart failure. So the majority die unnatural. That's in this country. They don't have a lot of problem with that in Nigeria because they're walking everywhere. And cancer is not very common. Oladare Akimbo said, the average Nigerian doesn't know anybody who has cancer and doesn't know anybody who knows anybody who has cancer. They're not eating all the chemicals that we get. They're not exposed to as much. And our third largest cause of death in the United States is iatrogenic disease. How many of you know what iatrogenic means? That means it's caused by the medical profession. Either side effect. Now they're saying that's the third largest cause, though some doctors are saying, no, it is the largest cause. Because a lot of times somebody dies and they say, well, his heart died. Well, it was the treatment for the heart that caused them to die. Or it was cancer. Like my sister-in-law. She had a big lump right up here. And finally the doctor said, well, we can take care of that. And they took, you know, cut that out. And they gave her radiation chemo. She was dead in less than a year. She had had this for years. I don't know, maybe 17, 18 years. But when they finally did something, they admitted to her before she died. They said, what we did actually caused it to spread throughout your whole body. But it was, I'm sure it was listed as death from cancer. But the side effects of taking the right drug, or the side effect of taking a wrong drug that is given to a person in a hospital. Or we've had two church members die from hospital-acquired infections. I mean, and they were not life-threatening things that took them to the hospital. So, third cause. I mean, very few people just get old and their body just quits anymore. And the same is true in Nigeria, usually infectious. I think that's interesting. And we'd say, well, I'm going to live to be 90. You don't know. I don't know. I don't know any ancestors that lived to be 90. So why should I? Two of my grandparents died of heart attacks in their 50s. My grandfather, other grandfather, lived to be in his 80s, but he was senile. My grandmother, one grandmother, lived to her 80s and had her clear mind. So I got a 1 out of 4 chance to make it, you know, if you follow that. He went on to say, here is not our home. Here is not our home. This is not our home. Now, I'm so glad I got home before I got sick. I asked God, please don't let us get sick in Nigeria. 2 days after I get home, I get a cold. And I'm thanking God every day I'm at home. You know, if somebody else was saying the same thing. If you're going to be sick, be at home. You know, your own bed, your own bath, you can get up. It's wonderful to be home if you're going to be sick. Psalm 119, verse 19. Psalm 119, verse 19. And this goes along with, teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. I am a stranger in the earth. This is not our home. We're just visitors here. Just temporary. Do not hide your commandments from me. Now, God's commandments give us the heart of wisdom. God's Spirit writing the commandments within us. What 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. Once again, God is telling us, you're temporary. You're just a visitor in this flesh. You better obtain a heart of wisdom. And here's another way of saying it, right here. In 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Beloved, I beg you, as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul. That is, see yourself as very temporary in the flesh and looking forward to eternal life in the Spirit, and do something about it today. Job chapter 14. Job chapter 14. And he read several verses in chapter 14. He started with verses 1 and 2. Actually, Coleman gave two sermons at the feast. And his other sermon was very meaningful. It was on being content with what God has given us. Be content with what has come into our lives. You know, I mean, here is a very poor man. Very poor man. And has lost one child. And has been, you know, had tuberculosis. And he's saying, be content. And he's really a good speaker. I wish he could come here and speak to you. Not likely to happen, but it would be great. Job chapter 14, verse 1. Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Isn't that exactly what Jacob told Pharaoh? He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. Well, God healed Job. Right? He didn't die of this disease. Where is he now? He's dead. Jesus resurrected Lazarus. Where's Lazarus? He's dead. Verse 5. Since his days are determined, the number of his months is with you. You have appointed his limits so that he cannot pass. There's just a certain amount of time we're given. Numbered his months. His days are determined. Verses 10 through 16. Job 14, verses 10 through 16. But man dies and is laid away. Indeed, he breathes his last, and where is he? As water disappears from the sea, and a river becomes parched and dries up, so man lies down and does not rise. Now, he doesn't mean that it won't eventually in the resurrection, because he says, till the heavens are no more. That is, the heavens are going to split apart, and Jesus Christ will return. It's going to roll back like a scroll. Miraculous. They will not awake, nor be aroused from their sleep. Oh, that you would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service, or appointed time it could be, I will wait till my change comes. You shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. For now you number my steps. He says, look, how many steps are you going to take? How many steps am I going to take? There's a limit. For now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. James chapter 4. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. James 4, verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. That's an interesting statement. You don't know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? We can start services now. Just teasing. I didn't get the message to everybody, did I? How many of you got a message from me? Did anybody yesterday saying that on email reminding you that it'd be at 12:30 today? Okay. All right. Because another email I thought I sent out, and apparently nobody got. I'll make the announcement. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. That's all we've got now. Just this little vapor. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. And he emphasized, what do you have? You have today. You don't have tomorrow. It doesn't belong to you. You may have it. God may give us tomorrow, but it doesn't belong to us. It's not yours. What are you going to do? What am I going to do? What are we going to do today? If we don't do it, it's sin. We will plan and plan. Everybody in here will make plans for the future. We'll make plans for tomorrow. I got plans for tomorrow. Working on the shower floor. Taking up some old tile. Putting something down that won't leak and putting the tile back down. Maybe. I'd rather take grandchildren to the zoo, but I've put this shower floor off for a long time. But I don't know. I don't have tomorrow. I don't own it. Luke 12, verses 15 through 21. It's okay to plan, just to realize that our life is a breath. Luke 12, verses 15 through 21.
Jesus was warning people about looking at physical things. And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this.'" Wasn't this a good thought? "I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" Kind of like, I'd like to have a big, strong pickup with a nice travel trailer in the back and go stay a month in Florida during the winter, and then go over to Texas, then go out to California and stay a month out there near my brother, and go up to Yosemite during the summer and into Canada. And wow. See? "Many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool." By the way, that little dream I just mentioned, Lucretia, that sounds like purgatory to her. She wants a home with a yard. "God said to him, 'You fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then, whose will those things be which you have provided?'" Well, the kids will fight over them. That's what's going to happen if he had more than one kid, there's going to be not every person dies and their kids fight over it, but it has happened. I've known it. Lucretia and I have already divided most everything, and what goes to whom, and they got to choose. But since then, we bought some things that aren't on the list. Still some things. He took the saying that we have and added a word where he says, "If you fail to number and plan, you plan to fail." Now, we use that for kids, our young people, anybody saying, telling the young people, you got to make plans. If you fail to plan, you're really planning to fail. And he added the word, "If you fail to number and plan." Because the numbering of your life, not just your money, or your retirement, or 401k, and, if you number, you'll plan for eternity, was his point. He went through the verses on counting cost, which we usually read to everybody. Most of us, when we were baptized, the minister counseled us. He read from Luke 14, where it says, if you love hate not or love not far less your father, mother, brother, sister, wife, children, yea, and your own life also. And which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has sufficient to finish it? And he said, let's count the cost. He said, "You marry have problems. Add children, more problems. Car, must maintain.
Most Nigerians don't have cars, but he happens to have a car. Dari gave him his old car so he could try to support himself. He lives near the Owerri airport. It's about an hour drive from Owerri into from the airport in. So he goes out there and tries to get jobs to drive people in that. And I mean, that car is, Dari called it Old Faithful, but I said, you need to change the name to Old Unfaithful. When I was there, Days of Unleavened Bread, and he came to pick me up, and the throttle had gone through the floor. And so we had to hire another car, and then he had to take that car later and get somebody to weld the throttle where the hinge had, you know. Cars that we would have taken to the junkyard, they will keep going for years and years and years. And the reason is you can pay somebody $2 a day to work on your car. That's not true here, is it? So, stop saying later. This is a very important statement he made. Stop saying later. Don't say, after I get a job, after I get married. That's a big problem over there. Yeah. Well, I'll obey God after I'm married. I'll obey God after I get a good job. Don't wait. Do it now. And this is where he said, tomorrow is not yours. Do something now. He's talking about don't put off being close to God. Don't put off repenting. Don't put off prayer, Bible study, tithing, whatever it is. He quoted the verse again, therefore to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. We already read that. Jesus said, and I'm not going to turn to it, in John 9 verse 4, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. Jesus Christ had to count the days too. His days were numbered. And he said, I've got to work while I can. The night is coming when no one can work. God will not change his plans for us. We must change our plans to fit his plan. Then he had us turn back once again to Psalm 90 verse 12. And he read, so teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom.